Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 35, The Final Fight. I am one of your co-hosts, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is former VWA heavyweight champion, Chris Slate.
Hello.
And we come to you this week with a little bit of sad news. This is going to be Chris Slate's last episode of Power Pros.
Yeah, I'm sad to leave Power Pros behind, but I'm starting an exciting new job and just not going to have a lot of time to keep up with it. And rather than risk, missing an episode every now and again, I'd like to see the show hopefully continue on regularly and strongly in my absence. So I'm stepping down.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how the show is going to continue on, if we'll be back next week or we might take a little break, but we're working on reconfiguring the show a little bit, and hopefully we'll be back shortly. We'll have an update on Twitter once we know a little bit more about that. But, for now, we're just going to continue with this week's show, and we're going to kick it off with the news. And first and foremost in the news this week is the fact that the Smash DLC, the final Smash DLC, is pretty much out right now as you're listening to this. By the time you hear this podcast, Corrin and Bayonetta and all the new costumes and all the stuff that goes with those characters will be available for download in the eShop on Wii U and Nintendo 3DS.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. It's a shame that we are recording this just a little bit before that broke, so we haven't had a chance to try it ourselves yet, but I remember when these two were first announced. I mean, obviously Bayonetta was the bigger kind of shock, that anytime you get a third-party character into Smash, it's a huge deal. But now that we're approaching, the release of Fire Emblem Fates, I'm finding myself more and more excited to try out Corrin and to get to know this guy.
Or girl. That's one of the cool things about this character, is that there is both male and female versions. The character also uses this crazy-looking sword, the Yato sword, that sort of looks like a chainsaw. And then he or she has all these dragon transformations. Transform, his or her hand into a dragon-like head to shoot a projectile and then bite characters. Do this dragon lunge move that actually, impales foes and stabs them into the ground. And, you can follow up with these, other crazy attacks, jump into the air with the dragon ascent, and, then the counter move and the final smash for Corrin are both, complete, transformations into the dragon. You just turn into a dragon, knock everybody back with the counter surge move and the torrential roar, which is, a big water-based dragon attack. That'll cause a lot of damage as well. So yeah, it's a pretty cool looking character. Includes music tracks to add to the existing Fire Emblem stages, even though there's not a new stage. And it looks like a pretty cool character.
Yeah, the dragon transformations are really what got me excited. When you first saw the reveal and we hadn't been introduced to the character properly yet, it did seem maybe just another Fire Emblem sword wielder. But the dragon transformations look like they could really set that character apart, and just the whole idea is so cool that I can't wait to really try him out and see everything that he/she can do.
Yeah, I mean, at least visually speaking, it's going to be way different from any of the other Fire Emblem or sword-wielding characters. But personally, I think I'm more excited about Bayonetta, the so-called Umbra Witch, who combines gunplay and demon attacks with a very combo-oriented offense that seems pretty deep and really cool, and in a way, almost as traditional fighting gamey as Ryu is, just because there's, so much technique and so much going on. You hold down the button for continuous gunfire attacks after the standard hits, and it just seems to lend itself to all sorts of creative craziness.
Yeah, and also she comes with her own exclusive level, the Clock Tower, which anyone familiar with the Bayonetta series will recognize. You're kind of falling through space and wild things are kind of happening during the battle. So that whole package looks really, really cool. And it's quite a different style of character, just the tone of her. I mean, obviously, the only thing you can kind of compare her to would be Solid Snake in Brawl, because she's also from a series of M-rated games. You know, they've maybe toned her down just a hair to make sure she fits into the role.
Just a hair. I see what you did there.
But she still seems to have retained all of her kind of, you know, sassy personality and everything. So, you know, it was especially good to see that kind of love thrown to a series that maybe didn't, you know, top the sales charts, but definitely found a huge, you know, passionate, devoted audience.
Mm-hmm. And if I had to guess, it would probably be the last character that was cooked up. But even so, it seems like there is a lot that went into creating this character. Like I said, you know, all kinds of depth and unique tactics available. So it looks really, really cool. Of course, she's also got both her outfits from Bayonetta 1 and Bayonetta 2. So it really feels like they went all out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Sakurai doesn't do anything halfway. Once he picks that character, he really sinks in and gives the fans as much as he can.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that is totally true. And then, of course, on top of those, there are these new DLC costumes for the Miis, Tails and Knuckles from the Sonic series, of course, and Ashley from WarioWare, Takamaru from the mysterious Murasame Castle, the obscure Gil from Tower of Druaga, and then the Bionic Armor, which is not from anything in particular, as far as I know.
No, yeah, I think that's just an original creation for Smash.
Mm-hmm.
Man... You know, I hear you just kind of rattle off that list of stuff, and one of the things that I'm definitely going to do once I download this last final batch of DLC is just kind of go through all the menus, the stage select and the character select, and just take it all in, because I can't think of another game, fighting game or otherwise, that has ultimately offered this much content. It really is quite an astounding kind of achievement.
Yeah, it's really, really crazy. I mean, I thought previous Smash Brothers games had a lot of stuff. But, you know, they pretty much pale in comparison to what's in this version of the game.
Yeah. And, you know, and we got to remember that when Sakurai first worked on this game, and even right to the point where he completed it, there really hadn't been any serious talks for DLC. That wasn't part of the original plan. So, you know, the fact that they've managed to add on so much stuff after he essentially thought he was done is pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, if you want to get all this, you can buy it in one total package for both Wii U and 3DS for a total of $19.88. Or you can buy the stuff separately. You know, it ranges from 75 cents for one of the Mii costumes to, I think it's $6.99 to get Bayonetta, both versions. The Wii U and the 3DS version, or $5.99 for one version. All kinds of, you know, different pricing in there, but yeah, $19.88 for everything, all in one package.
Mm.
It does sound kind of expensive when you say it that way, but you know, it is two games on two platforms, and you know, it's not like they were slacking when they made these characters. So I don't think I'm going to feel, you know, too much regret when I spend the funds in the eShop.
Yeah, and Smash is a game that people play for years and years, you know, either consistently or you put it down for a while and come back to it. But it's not like it's, you know, extra armor for a horse or something that, you know, you won't have very much use for.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Smash Brothers, there was a rumor making the rounds a couple of days ago that Super Smash Brothers is going to be a launch title. Get it? Launch title for the Nintendo NX system.
Yeah. I mean, that would be crazy if it were true.
It would be. And I would say it's so crazy, it's probably not true. I mean, they just finished this version of Smash Brothers. And to be able to dive right in and make another Smash Brothers game is really unthinkable, and have that ready for launch, if launch is any time in the next, you know, couple of years.
Well, the speculation I've seen online seems to lean more toward it just being a port. Like you've seen, actually we saw it with the Wii U. You know, we had some third-party titles, like there was an Arkham Asylum title, you know, that came out. And these were more of the definitive editions that you mm-hmm. tend to get after a game's been out for a while that includes, you know, DLC and things like that. So
yeah, and I was thinking that was the only way this was going to be possible, is if all it was sort of a, you know, a complete game of the year type edition that had all the DLC built right in. You know, I guess the graphics, I don't know how they'd be enhanced, but you know, maybe they could do something with that.
Well, the game already runs it at, I think, 60 frames per second. So it's not like there's an easy kind of, you know, bump up visually.
Right, exactly.
Looks great. My thinking on this, and you know, obviously we have no idea how much merit this rumor could have or not, but if it were to be true, then I think where it makes sense is even if the people who buy an NX initially are just, you know, other really loyal Nintendo fans that perhaps have already bought Smash on a different platform, is if you think about it, you know, right now, people who are consistently playing the Wii U, there's a huge chance that if you are, you know, frequently throughout the week, keeping up with the platform, you're probably dipping into either Splatoon or Mario Maker or Smash Brothers very, very regularly. So, you know, those communities are thriving. And those are kind of the premier campfires that Nintendo fans are kind of gathering around right now. So I imagine it would make some sort of sense to carry those communities over, you know, have an easy transition into the next platform. Like, you know, maybe you want to jump to NX, but you don't necessarily want to feel like you're leaving, you know, these things behind that all your friends are still playing on past Nintendo platforms. So so maybe that makes sense as kind of a way to just bridge that gap into the new generation.
Well, I could totally see it that way. And also, you know, like I said, you know, they've spent a lot of time on this game. They put a lot of effort into it. You know, it's just being finished up. And if the Wii U does have, you know, shorter lifespan than other Nintendo consoles, and obviously it's, you know, been less popular than some Nintendo consoles, it does kind of make sense to say, hey, let's find a way to make this game live on. Let's get it to a new audience. Let's make all this effort not go to waste. And so, you know, if they did do it as, you know, just a, you know, the definitive version, I could see that making sense in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like I'm backpedaling too much on my initial statement. my initial statement is new game, no way, Jose. Definitive edition, it's a possibility. That's what I'm saying.
I don't know how you could do a new game even within the next several years. I mean, even if Sakurai, you know, had the same team ready to go, I mean, he's just creatively. I mean, they threw everything.
Well, obviously, you put in all the characters from pro wrestling and the Inklings. And, you know, there you go. It's a worthwhile sequel right there.
Yeah. I mean, they could continue adding stages and characters, you know, until the end of time. There's still a lot there. I mean, all the more obvious ones at this point have been included already. But there's a lot more deeper cuts that fans would still get excited about. But
and Professor Layton. I want Professor Layton in there. He needs to stab somebody with his foil and with his hat. And with his puzzles.
But if only for Sakurai's health and sanity, I feel like, no, don't make the guy make another one, a brand new one straight away. Not that I wouldn't absolutely love it, but man, give the guy a break.
Well, speaking of games that are full of all kinds of, you know, crazy action and seeing all your different favorite characters come together, the Project X Zone 2 demo recently hit the Nintendo 3DS eShop. Have you had a chance to play this one, Mr. Slate?
I haven't. In fact, you'd mentioned it to me shortly before the podcast, and I didn't realize there was a demo out. Is it pretty cool?
I would say so. You know, it's definitely interesting, and it's totally crazy.
Well, those two things can go great together.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's got all these different characters from all these different games, and the game, you know, it just kind of runs with it and doesn't really worry about giving you too much of an explanation. It's like, okay, so Phoenix Wright is Heihachi Mishima's lawyer. And, oh, all of a sudden, Chris Redfield showed up and he's fighting some zombies. So Phoenix Wright better go hide in the sewer. But, oh, guess what? The sewer actually leads to the Makai realm where the Darkstalkers live. And now we got to go rescue him. And, you know, that's pretty much the whole gist of the demo. And it's insanity just, you know, in one sentence.
That sounds pretty cool, actually. I mean, just linking all those characters, even if it's in kind of a quick, you know, cheesy way, it reminds me of a Subspace Emissary from Smash Brothers Brawl.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of loony, but it's pretty cool, too. And the main characters are, you know, somewhat interesting. By interesting, I mean, like, every line that they spout is just overflowing with innuendo. It's like, geez, can you say maybe one line that's not sexual innuendo? No? No? Okay, all right. Well, at least Phoenix isn't talking that way.
Who are the main characters?
They're two original characters, I believe, or maybe they were in the first Project X Zone. I believe it's supposed to be called Project Cross Zone, by the way, but I'm going to keep calling it Project X Zone just because. So they're either new or they're from that, but they aren't from any other, you know, Capcom, Namco, or Sega series.
Hmm.
And they like talking about their libido and stuff. I don't know why.
Interesting character defining traits.
Yes. But the action is pretty fast-paced. I don't know if the characters are just leveled up for this demo, or maybe it's because, you know, they're early areas. But it seems pretty, you know, easy to link together special moves to, you know, make waste to your foes in a hurry. And, you know, I kind of like that in a strategy RPG game like this. You know, seems fairly easy to get into and just have a lot of fun with crazy combos and stuff.
Well, is the combat kind of like side-scrolling action Final Fight style, or is it more turn-based RPG, or what is it exactly?
Oh, it's definitely turn-based. I mean, it looks, you know, like maybe a 2D action game, but no, you're just like hitting button combinations to unleash canned moves. You aren't pressing the button to, you know, do an attack or anything like that. You know, you just hit, you know, A and suddenly some crazy combo comes out of your character, or you hit, you know, right and A, or, you know, maybe you have a charged up move and that's the R button, and then you do some even crazier move, and then you can link these together, and, you know, you can, you know, wipe out you know, your enemy in one turn, pretty much, if you know what you're doing, it seems.
Oh, cool. And that's that demo's available now?
Yep, sure is. In fact, I think it's been available for about a week.
Oh, man. Well, I'll definitely download it tonight then.
Mm-hmm. And then Sega has announced a new game coming out to the Nintendo 3DS this summer. That is Seventh Dragon 3, Code VFD.
Interesting name.
Yes. And, you know, the previous Seventh Dragon games have not come out in the United States. They were, you know, fairly acclaimed. And I remember, you know, covering the first one, which was on the Nintendo DS system in Nintendo Power. We were kind of hoping it would come out here, but it never did. The follow-ups, I believe, came out on PSP. But, you know, we never got it. It looked cool. But finally, with this installment, it is coming out here and on Nintendo system. And, you know, as the name implies, it's about dragons. It's an RPG. You got to go out and fight these dragons. And while you're at it, you're going to travel through time. You're going to, you know, go to Atlantis in the past, this place called Eden in the future, and present-day Tokyo. I'm not sure if it's actually Tokyo of 2016 or Tokyo of 2100, because the game is apparently set in 2100. But you're going to these three eras nonetheless. You're going to, you know, build up a team. You're going to do lots of character customization. Apparently, you're going to even build up your headquarters, a little bit of, you know, Suikoden style. But yeah, it's just further proof that this is totally the year of JRPGs, especially on the 3DS and Nintendo systems.
The way you describe it, it almost sounds like a Chrono Trigger meets Panzer Dragoon kind of game.
Well, it's probably not, but hopefully.
Maybe that's overstating it. Don't want to get too many people's hopes up.
Well, you're killing the dragons. They are the bad guys. You're not playing as the dragon and then fighting on the dragon. You are defeating these dragons. They look pretty big and nasty. I think, you know, there's probably a little bit of, you know, Monster Hunter influence going on in here.
That game seems to be influencing a lot of Japanese developed titles these days.
Yes, very much so. So tell me, have you had a chance to check out the Super Mario Maker wallpaper maker?
I did. You know, it's funny, we haven't talked about this, but I ran across that website yesterday, I believe. And I didn't actually make a full wallpaper, but I fooled around with it for a little bit. It's interesting how it works, just like, you know, you're assembling the pieces in the you know, every little brick by brick of your perfect wallpaper image, just like you'd assemble a scene in the actual game.
Uh-huh, it's true. I remember I've said on here before that I would have really liked Nintendo to make, you know, a Mario Maker app that lets you just, you know, design the levels when you're not actually playing your Wii U. And this doesn't do that, but it almost does. It's got a lot of the tools there. It doesn't have everything, certainly not every item or every enemy or every enemy variation, but it lets you do a lot of stuff. And, you know, while it is, you know, just to make a wallpaper for your computer or for your mobile phone, you know, can be used as well to just be like, oh, hey, this is giving me some great ideas for a level. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's at the, is that at the U.S. site? Or I think I found it at the Japanese site.
I found the Japanese one. You know, I get emails from Nintendo NCL to promote their stuff because I have a Japanese account to go with my Japanese 3DS. And that's how I found out about it. The place where you can find this is http://MarioMaker-WP.Nintendo.co.jp. So it is a great, fun little time waster. And like I said, it's great for giving inspiration for Mario Maker creations in the actual game as well.
Yeah. I love decking out my IMAX screen with Nintendo-themed wallpaper from time to time, too. So sooner or later, I'll definitely give that a shot.
Well, I think that does it for the news today. We're going to take a little intermission and then come back with our big topic this week, which in commemoration of this being Slate's last episode is going to be all about why we love Nintendo and sort of talk about what we got started doing this podcast to begin with. All right, we are back, and we're here to discuss our big topic, which is essentially why we love Nintendo. And, there are many reasons to love Nintendo. There are, people have gotten involved with Nintendo at different eras due to, different games and due to, different, impacts that Nintendo has made on the industry. But, from our perspective, we'd like to discuss that a little bit. Mr. Slate, why don't you tell us, what the reason is that you love Nintendo?
Well, I jotted down a list of a few things, a few kind of, bullet points here, I guess you could say. And the first one on my list is just consistent top-notch quality. I mean, if you think about it, there are some, there are obviously some great game developers out there beyond Nintendo. But nobody other than Nintendo delivers just consistent quality to the point where we kind of become spoiled to it sometimes, I think, you look at a game like any Super Mario Brothers platformer, and sometimes we get a little caught up in comparing one platformer to another Super Mario platformer, but any one of them are better than 99% of the other games that are going to come out in any given year. In my opinion,
this is pretty much true.
So I think, and then you even look at stuff like I still haven't gotten a chance to play Mario and Luigi Paper Jam yet, but you look at something like that comes out, and it isn't one of the year's more high-profile Nintendo releases, but it's still, from all accounts, just a great, solid game. So,
yeah, very polished from what I've played so far.
Yeah, so I just feel like, the biggest thing, going back to when I was a kid, you never knew. There were lots of games on sale, right? And back then, you didn't have the internet. And at the beginning, when Nintendo first took off, you didn't really even have game magazines for a little while. So you kind of just had word of mouth.
And the Fun Club newsletter.
And the Nintendo Fun Club
newsletter. It would never steer you wrong.
And even after Nintendo Power came out, right, there were still so many games that actually weren't in the magazine, or maybe you didn't get full feature spreads in the magazine. So you never were quite sure. When you went to the store, you saw a lot of games on that shelf, or you saw a lot of those, cards on the wall at Toys R Us in the aisle that were showing you games you really didn't know anything about. So you started to figure out a few things really quickly. One, you knew if it was an NES game and had that silver Konami box, it was probably pretty good. Usually
this
a safe
is very
bet.
True.
Same with Capcom. If it had that weird Captain Commando drawing with this kind of space background on the sides, that was probably a safe bet.
Yeah, that's sort of true.
But I found out pretty quickly that there was no safer bet than buying an actual Nintendo game from Nintendo. And nobody delivers, AAA experiences 100% of the time. But it's very, very rare, going back through the whole history of Nintendo, that company has ever been linked with an outright bad game. And that's
Urban Champion.
Well, even Urban Champion. I mean, when the NES first came out, I'm not going to say Urban Champion's a great game, but it's a product of its time. But it's like... Even on, I mean, even today, you know, great games on Xbox, great games on PlayStation. I don't know that I could look at Sony, and maybe I'm biased, but I don't know that I could look at Sony or look at Microsoft and say, nearly to the extent that Nintendo does, that they knock it out of the park as often, you know, as Nintendo.
I'm not going to say that, you know, Nintendo can do no wrong. And, you know, I think if you look back at a lot of those early titles that they did, you know, a lot of them are kind of, you know, not so great. You know, Urban Champion, Clue Clue Land, Gyromite. But, you know, for the most part, they are, you know, the most reliable company for doing, you know, great games month in and month out. And that's why it's so surprising when there is something that, you know, doesn't, you know, set the world on fire, like when the last Mario Tennis, you know, was kind of basic, or, you know, that last Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival was, you know, not so great. Those are definitely the exceptions. And it's also the reason why, you know, like something like Mario Tennis, you know, maybe if that was from another publisher, you know, we'd be like, oh, wow, this is amazing. But, you know, from Nintendo, you know, we come to expect, you know, a whole lot more, and perhaps even hold them to a higher standard sometimes.
Absolutely. And I hope that's something that Nintendo fans don't lose sight of too much is that, I mean, I've thought that exact same thing. Even reviewing games at Nintendo Power, I would play a game from Nintendo and I would think, whether it was a great game or just an okay game, and I would think to myself, wow, you know, if a third party made this, people would be all over it, you know, talking about how great it was. But Nintendo makes it, and it's like, yeah, well, we expected that. We expected Nintendo to make a great game. So, you know, the challenge keeps, you know, getting higher and higher for Nintendo to meet those expectations. But, you know, for the better part of 30 years now, they've been doing it more often than not. So that was the first bullet point on my list of just, you know, why we were such big Nintendo fans.
Mm-hmm. Well, for my money, you know, Nintendo, you know, they are great. They do make consistently great games. But, you know, just as important for me, and I think probably the main reason that, you know, I fell in love with Nintendo is that, you know, they are truly innovative. They are, you know, perhaps the biggest trendsetters in all of gaming.
Absolutely.
Know, they come out there and they, you know, define what gaming is all about. You know, it started, you know, way back in the NES days. They're like, no, what you thought was gaming? No, that's not cool. What's cool is something like, you know, Super Mario Brothers that's got all these, you know, hidden things going on, and you know, it's constantly side-scrolling and it moves really smoothly, and feel the way the character moves, it's amazing and different and not clunky, and you know, there's variety from level to level. You know, here you can go swimming, and you know, here you're in a castle stage, you know, fighting you know, fire bars and a giant you know, turtle monster at the end. And you know, maybe they weren't the first to do it, but certainly they're the ones to do it best, and to sort of say, yes, this is the way things should be. And, you know, that's continued, you know, all the way up till now, where they're either creating new experiences like they did with, you know, motion control and the Wii Remote, or they're, you know, redefining experiences like, you know, with Splatoon, saying, look, shooters don't have to be just these gray, gory bloodfests. There's a different way to do it. Yeah, there's a way to make it cool and fun.
Yeah, I think a lot of people unfairly, to a large extent, will categorize Nintendo as kind of just being, you know, one or two trick pony. They might say they just make a lot of Mario games, or they make a lot of Zelda games, or they publish a lot of Pokemon games. And of course, that's true, but it's hard. I mean, you look. I mean, Super Mario Brothers is going strong. You know, that franchise and those series that kind of go under the Mario umbrella are just as thriving now as they've ever been, and and that's been over 30 years. I mean, think of how many other franchises have been huge industry leading franchises but never last even a fraction of that long. And you know, the trick is that, you know, Super Mario Sunshine is a very, very different game from Super Mario Brothers. You know, Super Mario Brothers 2 is a very, very different game from, you know, Super Mario 3D World. And it's that innovation even within franchises, not just straight kind of sequel. I mean, we saw that a little bit with the new Super Mario Brothers titles, which all had a very, very strong, similar theme. But they find a way, and, you know, Zelda's a great example of this too, to really change things up. So, and then occasionally they will come out with the next brand new thing that's unlike anything you've ever seen before. I mean, think about it. We wouldn't have control pads if it wasn't for Nintendo, much less any of the...
We'd still be wagging our joysticks.
Exactly. Much less you wouldn't have shoulder buttons. I mean, you think of the lock-on camera they introduced with Ocarina of Time. You know, you think of, you know, Mode 7 graphics, and that eventually started to pave the way for Star Fox and polygonal gaming. And kind of what you alluded to earlier, it's not that Nintendo necessarily always came up with, you know, all of these ideas completely out of the blue, but they oftentimes would see a piece here or there, just like they did with the 3DS when they saw, okay, 3D technology is getting to the point where they can now have glasses-free 3D. How do we kind of bring this in? When's the right time? What do we pair it with? What kind of other features? How do we shape the software that supports it? And it's the whole package and the whole unified idea when it comes through in the end, where people will look at it and go, okay, now this all makes sense. Maybe some other companies have even tried similar things in the past, but it just never clicked right. And that's what Nintendo's always had. It was such great vision, and especially with regard to how hardware needs to be built around software. I mean, that is a huge, I agree, that's a huge part of what makes them special. And, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way, because, you know, you want to have pure artists kind of working on this stuff. And of course there are market expectations and fan demands and things like that. And to some degree, you have to be aware of where the medium is and what people want. And you see Nintendo constantly evolving to kind of meet those needs and expectations. But at the end of the day, if Nintendo can't show you something that that you want, but in a way you didn't know you would want before, then that would kind of take a huge amount of the value away from what they do.
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly easy to be a derivative video game publisher. It's easy to see, oh, this is, you know, what's popular now. I'm going to copy that. And suddenly, you know, you've got a million character-based platformers. You've got a million one-on-one fighting games. You've got a million, open world adventure games. You have a million motion-controlled, sports compilations. But, Nintendo, was able to not just be like, yeah, we're just going to copy what's popular. They were always able to come up with something new, and sometimes, really, really, really groundbreaking. And, that's always impressive.
Mm-hmm. Now, the next thing on my list would be that Nintendo offers such a broad range of experiences. And again, like I said, sometimes people try to pigeonhole Nintendo as simply, being about Mario or about Pokemon. But I'd argue that they do just as good a job as anyone, and maybe even better than everyone, at offering a broad range of experiences. And if you think about it, it comes down a lot of this to your point of view. But my personal opinion is that if you look at something like, an Xbox machine, or you look at a PlayStation machine, there are no doubt great games on those machines. I have pretty much all the systems, and I've been following them for years, and I just like to play everything that's great. However, I really strongly associate a very specific type of experience with those platforms, and it's primarily either the first-person shooter or the third-person action game / shooter that's very cinematic, very driven by a narrative, very much about having realistic graphics. And there's nothing wrong with those games at all, but I feel like that's really what those systems offer. And of course, there's always going to be something that you can't confine in that description. But when I look at what Nintendo does, I mean, you look at everything from, Wii Fit to Super Mario Brothers to Xenoblade Chronicles to Pokemon. I mean, it's all over the map, and both kind of stylistically and with the actual gameplay. And so that's something that I appreciate, because I've never been just one type of gamer. I like pretty much anything, and I like to be exposed to different types of stuff.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree.
Yeah, so, that's something, especially going forward. There are certain types of games, if I want to play an Uncharted game, then that's a great opportunity to play an Uncharted game on a PlayStation 4. If I want to play NBA 2K, whatever, then there's that. But in most other instances, I just want to be surprised about what Nintendo's got going on, because I know they're going to do more different kinds of things, and they're going to do a lot of the things that I love that people don't still do anymore. If you think about it, a lot of the Nintendo games, they aren't exactly like the arcade games of yore, but I feel like that's still part of their DNA.
Yeah, they still have a lot of that spirit going on.
Yeah, and maybe a part of it is because Japanese game development is still obviously so important to Nintendo platforms, and it's obviously almost non-existent on the Xbox, and still not nearly as important, I think, on PlayStation, although they do have some key titles from their worldwide studios. So I don't know, as a gamer who grew up during that big kind of arcade gold rush, that's the kind of action that I still appreciate. You know, those, you play Splatoon even, and you see it in the very slick, polished interface and the music and everything. It really, you know, it's constantly pulling you in like a great classic arcade game. So yeah, I'm starting to ramble a little bit now, but there's just a lot, I think, that you can get on Nintendo platforms that you just don't really get anywhere else.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that when you're talking about other systems, that's not necessarily what's going on with just the first party. If you were to only have an Xbox with Microsoft games or only have a PlayStation with Sony's games, I feel like the experience would be, you know, way, way, way more limited than what you get on a Nintendo system. Like you said, Nintendo really tries to be diverse. Now that diversity doesn't, you know, usually necessarily expand out to, you know, like the gritty M-rated, you know, first-person shooter or third-person action game, there still is, you know, a very, very wide array of experiences you get on a Nintendo system that you might probably not get from other first-party publishers.
Absolutely. And you touched on something that makes me think of another one of my bullet points, which is the history of Nintendo and the brand identity and what it means to people. And, you know, kind of like what you said with the PlayStation, even back when I worked on PSM, a PlayStation magazine, and, you know, during the PlayStation 1 and the PlayStation 2 era, when they were, Sony was kind of, you know, at the height of its powers, I really felt like, and this was really no knock on it, it was just kind of observing the facts. The PlayStation console for a while was kind of the default kind of, you know, video game experience. And it wasn't that Sony themselves were pumping out all the most defining games. I mean, that era was defined by, you know, your Metal Gears, your Tomb Raiders, your Devil May Cries. You know, and I felt like it was, the PlayStation was really more of the DVD, you know, the DVD player that played the movies. You know, most of the great movies you wanted that DVD player for were made by other studios.
I guess. I mean, you still got your Crash Bandicoots and your, you know, Spyro the Dragons. Even though they weren't, you know, technically, you know, fully owned first party properties. So it still had, you know, some of that stuff. But that's really, I feel, diminished since the PS1 days. And, you know, now that's kind of, you know, fallen, you know, only to Nintendo.
No, that's true. And I didn't mean to suggest that, you know, there weren't those kind of, you know, top level experiences from Sony and them. I just think it was a much smaller slice of the pie. I mean, I still think, you know, I still consider Resident Evil to kind of be a PlayStation franchise just because that's where it blew up biggest, you know, originally.
I guess, although Resident Evil 4, you know, hitting on the GameCube was, you know, pretty massive as well.
That's true, yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is I feel like, you know, when you've loved a Nintendo game on a Nintendo console, there's a much bigger chance that it was a game you could only play on a Nintendo console or Nintendo handheld, as opposed to, you know, a lot of the other platforms, which, you know, you're mainly playing, you know, maybe multi-format titles on those for most of the year. So I think that is another reason that, you know, you just, because so many of those experiences on Nintendo platforms have been exclusive to Nintendo platforms, it just builds a much clearer kind of, you know, brand for them. And also because even across different types of games and gameplay, the kind of core values behind Nintendo game development are always kind of there and present and evident. And so even in very different types of games, there's a certain kind of familiarity or whether it's just the overall quality or how it, you know, in the correct way to pull a player in and kind of, you know, gradually let them kind of discover a game world, all that kind of stuff, all that DNA is kind of there. And you can just kind of wrap yourself up in this nice, you know, world of Nintendo that I think is just much more fully formed than maybe what you've gotten on the other platforms.
Well, Nintendo certainly has a very, you know, obvious mission statement that's about, you know, easily accessible but still deep, family-friendly fun that you don't really get from, you know, the other consoles necessarily. And, you know, that's a great thing. It, you know, it really has worked for them. and they stick to it and they really make it work. And, you know, they're a lot like Disney in that way. And, you know, much like Disney, you know, sometimes they come across as, you know, not necessarily being the coolest. You know, sometimes they have a bit of a problem when, you know, players reach a certain age and they're like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, not the brand for me. But in the end, people come back to it because it really is, you know, that darn good.
Yeah, and that touches on another kind of bullet point I had, which is that Nintendo is consistently brave and willing to buck trends. Now, you know, that is not always 100% a good thing if you're the type of gamer who really wants something specific from Nintendo.
Yeah, and, I admit, you know, sometimes it can be frustrating, but usually it is a good thing.
Yeah, because I think what you want in any kind of creative enterprise, you want the creator to follow their own passions and beliefs. Because, you know, that's how you get something really great. That's how you get something really original. And if they're just constantly trying to, yeah, I mean, how many people, maybe until the PlayStation VR headset comes out, how many people really wanted a Move controller? You know, that was something that was created and put out very much in response to the Wii Remote.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And they just felt like, you know, hey, this is a huge market. We were caught off guard and we're going to follow now. And you don't usually see that from Nintendo. Nintendo, mm-hmm. You know, maybe they'll miss an opportunity here or there over the years. But more often than not, they're like, hey, you know what you didn't know you wanted? Touchscreen gaming. You know, hey, you didn't know what would be the cool next big thing? Well, we've redefined how games are, or we'd rather establish the blueprint for how you make a polygonal action game with Super Mario 64. So, you know, I'd very much rather have a company be a little bit of a mad creative genius and occasionally strike out if that's what it takes to deliver the next game-changing thing.
It's like what I was saying earlier. Nintendo really is at its best when it's being innovative, and if it does, you know, sort of repurpose an existing idea, it does so in its own unique way, like how it reinvented shooters with Splatoon. And for another example, you know, they certainly did not popularize fighting games. You know, obviously, that was Capcom with Street Fighter II, but you know, then when they wanted to make a really big splash, I mean, first there was Killer Instinct, which was, you know, a little derivative, but that was, you know, from Rare, not from Nintendo. But then they come out with Smash Brothers, and, you know, it changes the rules. It's all about four players. It's all about, you know, these simple button inputs. It's all about, you know, slamming your opponents off the screen. And it just takes things in a completely different way for fighting games, but it's still equally valid. And, you know, it's earned itself, you know, a rightful place in the hierarchy of fighting games.
Yeah, I remember talking to people about Smash, and I would consider it, or I would call it a fighting game. And I remember a lot of people would go, well, it's not really a fighting game. I'm like, mm-hmm. Well, why is it
not? Yeah, it had that reputation early on, 15 years ago. People wanted to reject it. They're like, nah, that doesn't count.
I know. But for me, that just underscores how important it is for Nintendo to bring fresh ideas, because people had gotten to the point, and I guess a lot of people still do, define kind of game genres so narrowly. Because so much of what we see these days is just very small, incremental, you know, iterations of what came before. So that when someone, you know, still very much with the same basic concept, hey, one guy's on the left, one guy's on the right, you know, you go at each other and you have different, you know, I mean, any way you want to describe it in vague mm-hmm. terms, Smash Brothers is a fighting game. But because it changes things up, you know, enough to make it fresh, people for a while just didn't know what to think of it. And, well, some people did. But I think that's important. I think that it's important that games come out that make us challenge, you know, our preconceived notions, and that we can't just easily pigeonhole into this corner that we've already firmly established with so many other titles.
Yeah, this is completely true.
Now, another thing that I really appreciate about Nintendo, and I'm not quite sure how to phrase this, so stick with me, but I think you'll see where I'm going with it, is handheld gaming.
I totally understand what you're saying.
Because I think, you know, Sony obviously saw an opportunity there. They said, well, look, we came into the marketplace and introduced a console when we hadn't been there before, and we had great success. Let's do the same with this, because obviously Nintendo with the Game Boy and later with the DS has established a great portable space. Let's enter it. But, you know, they came in and had some success. I think it looks like, I mean, obviously we don't know what Sony will do in the future, but it looks like maybe they're out of the handheld business after.
Well, they're already calling the Vita a legacy system, even though it seems to still be doing pretty well over in Japan. But, I mean, Nintendo was the first one to really do handheld gaming right with interchangeable cartridges and near console quality experiences on a handheld, and they have been doing that ever since. And it's not the only game in town anymore, but they did overcome so many competitors that tried to be like, okay, we're going to outdo you in this way with better specs. We're going to outdo you because we're in color and you're not. We're going to outdo you because we can play the actual console games on our handheld and yours can't. But Nintendo was always able to keep it going and do it right and deliver these unique experiences that are best tailored for handhelds. And even now, I mean, portable gaming or mobile gaming, anybody can do it. Everybody's got a phone that they can, play some, crappy, free, easily accessible game. But if you want an actual, great, amazing game, you're much better off going with a Nintendo system.
Absolutely. And I don't mean to disrespect, and I'm sure you didn't either, all of the, there's good apps out there. There's good games on iPhone and stuff.
But there are indeed.
But I do feel like I personally judge those a lot differently. But you can take any standard...
They're 99% crap, though. Let me say that. Well, they're 99% crap.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much...
Probably more than that, because there's so many bad games.
There's such a glut of, Flappy Bird clones and things like that, it's tough. I mean, you can find the featured games or whatever in an app store, and, it's not a big risk to go with those. But I feel like...
But there are some good ones. We don't want to say there aren't.
No. But I feel like even when I find one that I really like in that environment... If I step back and think about it, I think, well, this, an average Nintendo handheld game still destroys this. Mm-hmm. And, part of that is my own personal preference. But I also think, there's only so much you can do on a flat screen without, buttons, without, maybe always the amount of horsepower you might want for a certain type of game. So, and back to what you were saying before, there have been kind of, sexier portables, as far as, the Lynx had color graphics, the Sega Game Gear had color graphics. Then later on, you got, like you said, the PlayStation Portable was offering, visuals and games that were really meant to feel like you're taking the full-fledged console experience.
That was actually a Turbo Express reference. I was talking about playing the console games on your hand.
Oh, well, those literally were the console games, weren't they?
Yes, they were. But that's fine. We can pretend that's talking a great, about the Vita and the PSP.
That example works, too. In every case... Nintendo sat there and for most of that history said, well, you know what? We've got our screen's black and white. We're fine with that. You know why? Because the batteries last longer and the price isn't as bad. Game Gear, you could, it looked great, but you're playing it for like 30 minutes at a clip before you've got to like put new batteries in the thing. So, Nintendo always has its eye on the whole picture. And not just any one part of it, because so many other people would say, well, why don't they just, do it this way or that way? And Nintendo's always taken a very thoughtful, measured approach. And, sometimes that doesn't necessarily get you what you think you'd want. But when you see the alternatives, you realize that maybe Nintendo had it right all along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always appreciated the unique handheld experiences that Nintendo is able to deliver, or, that other manufacturers are able to deliver as well. And I really hate, seeing... dedicated gamer-focused handhelds, being pushed aside by mobile. And I love that Nintendo appears to be continuing along this path, and it's something that I never want to see go away. If, I just want to kick back and relax and, lay down in bed and play a game, there's really no better way to do it than Nintendo system. And, I hope it continues on for as long as I'm a gamer.
Absolutely, me too. I'd like to think that, just like, DVD ate into, movie ticket sales, but people still go to the movies. Every time we've gotten one kind of new form of entertainment, it doesn't necessarily make the old obsolete. People thought consoles might have been on a downward trend, and now look what PlayStation 4 has managed to do. And 3DS has had some great success, sold them a lot of units. So I'd like to think that even if, it's easy for kids to have access to, a big library of free or almost free games on like an iPhone or whatever, if they really like games, then there's no reason today that they wouldn't be just as interested as we were yesterday in playing a superior selection of games on a device that was created specifically for great gaming.
Oh, I certainly hope so.
Now, my last point is actually kind of the summation, I think, of everything that we've been talking about here. But because of all these things, I love the passionate fan community for Nintendo. Even in times where Nintendo hasn't sold the most hardware, I feel like the voices of the Nintendo fans are always kind of the loudest. Or you know, you're seeing, you go on message boards, you go on NeoGAF or whatever online, and like it seems like half the threads are always about something Nintendo related, just because people care so much about these franchises and about the history and the future of the company. I mean, you know, whether it's people kind of coming to our Nintendo Power anniversary party we had at Nintendo World Store years ago, dressed up in cosplay and of Link, and or the letters we used to get at Nintendo Power from people who either were you know, part of a group of Nintendo fans, or maybe they were the only person at the school that they knew that loved The Legend of Zelda so much. I just feel like because Nintendo's brand of gaming has a more specific kind of identity, I think that means that the group of people who buy into that and who appreciate those qualities are a much more tightly knit group. And so whether it's me or you, you know, physically, you know, interfacing, sitting down at lunch, just talking about Nintendo like we used to do, you know, every day, or it's you know, me seeing a guy online talk about how much he loved this experience that I also loved back on a past Nintendo console, I feel like there really is a lot that binds us together as Nintendo fans.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, working on Nintendo Power was certainly not the first gaming magazine or publication that I worked on, but certainly it had, you know, the most passionate fans. You could always count on you know, them to want to chime in about, you know, everything pertaining to the world of Nintendo, and you know, it was always, you know, if not just you know, overwhelmingly positive, it was, you know, very upbeat and involved, and they always had something amusing to say at the very, very least. And that's not something that you get from every you know, community.
That's right, and I think that's something we started to discover, especially in the last couple of years where I was at Nintendo Power, was that, you know, on any other video game magazine, really all people cared about was what's next, what's next, what's next. But we could occasionally slow down and take a look back and just have a fun feature or article on something that people played, you know, 10 years ago. And people were just as much or maybe even more excited to kind of engage with the magazine that way, just because... you know, for Nintendo fans especially, it isn't just about what's next, although of course we all care about that, but it's remembering how much you enjoyed all the past experiences and connecting to each other, you know, through those as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to agree with you. And of course, you know, like they always say, you know, the company is nothing without its fans. So of course you got to give a shout out for that.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up this topic. And unfortunately, I think that is pretty much going to bring this episode of Power Pros and this era of Power Pros, I guess you could say, your time on the show anyway, Mr. Slate, to a close as well. But before we sign off, there is still time for a dramatic reading. This time from the back of the box of one of your favorite NES games, Slate, Adventures of Dino Ricky. In prehistoric times, where ancient dinosaur creatures ruled, the adventures of Dino Ricky began. A courageous and intelligent young man, Dino Ricky is determined to establish mankind's future in this violent age. Dino Ricky must explore and fight his way through deserts filled with quicksand, sinking lotus traps, dark caverns, and deep canyons. As Dino Ricky begins his adventure, he is armed with a shooting weapon that will change and progress from rocks to axes, from axes to boomerangs, from boomerangs to fiery torches by collecting... There's just a weird fist icon here. I don't even know how to say that. By collecting fist icons. There are many hidden items that will help Dino Ricky to increase his strength. Life. Fly like an eagle. One that will change Dino Ricky to Macho Ricky, the ancient warrior, and many more. Dino Ricky will need all the ancient knowledge and items he can find before facing the dinosaur bosses. Tyrannosaurus, Pterodon, Monster Fly, and Giant Cobra.
Wow. I have such horrible memories of that game.
I'll bet you didn't know that Giant Cobra was a dinosaur.
Well, you know, I figured since humans and dinosaurs exist in this game together, all bets are off.
All right, then.
Well, that does it for this week, and I guess this does it for me on Power Pros Podcast. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at Power Pros Pod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow The Hoff on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and I'll continue to be at Chris Slate. Hoff has a really cool blog you should check out called Still Playing With Power, and you can find it at christhehoff.tumblr.com. And you can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com. We really appreciated having you listen each and every week, and hopefully you will continue to do so once Power Pros comes back in its new Super Evolved form, whenever that is. And thanks for listening.
For myself, Chris Slate.
See ya.
And our commanding officer, Commander Khan.
Agents are go!
We will see you next time, I hope. Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's it.